Track 11, and we have two feature articles for you this week. The first one is from TFN Soundings called A Childhood Christmas Memory, in which Colin recalls a family visit to his grandparents on Boxing Day in 1950, which included a visit from Father Christmas and an extra special treat.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, this is Colin. I'm going to tell you about one particular childhood Christmas. When I was a small child, Boxing Day was traditionally spent, together with our relatives, at my grandparents' large house in North London. Christmas 1950 was no different. At that time, most of my relatives lived in the same area, and very few had cars. I remember we walked to my grandparents. My mum and dad loaded down with bags of food. Everyone chipped in. There was still rationing, remember? As well as presents for the family. Everyone bought for the children in the family, and there were lots of us. The Boxing Day meal was undertaken with the precision of a military campaign. The children dined at a large trestle table, which had been erected in the conservatory, while the grown-ups had their meal in another room, seated around my grandfather's full-size snooker table, which fortunately had a wooden cover. I'm really not sure how they managed to feed all of us at the same time, but they did. Once the meal was finished, the younger members of the family were more than ready for the highlight of the evening. This was a visit of Father Christmas to distribute the small mountain of presents at the foot of the Christmas tree, which stood in the Holy of Holies, the front room. Although we'd all had our main presents at home the day before, there was the added excitement of more gifts to come from the grandparents, uncles, and aunts. A distant uncle, dressed in a red suit with a false beard, had been sent outside to tap on the window to announce the arrival of Father Christmas. And no trigger warnings for our mental health in those days. Think about it. A strange man with a false beard and a red nose peers unannounced through the window at a group of children. But remember, this was 1950. We still had rationing, and trigger warnings related specifically to our Roy Rogers cap pistols, whereas for our mental health, we had to make do with either "I'm feeling a bit fed up today" or "I'm feeling all right," etc. Anyway, one of us was delegated to let in Uncle Jim, or whoever's turn it was that year, to play the man in the red suit. His entrance was greeted with cheers and wild applause, and he soon set to work handing out the presents. As soon as his task had been completed, a greatly relieved Father Christmas, or Uncle Jim, left, leaving a trail of destruction consisting of torn wrapping paper in his wake. He then returned to the house 5 minutes later, ready for a well-earned Christmas drink. Later, in another part of the house, while the grown-ups were making short work of whatever alcoholic beverages were on offer, I remember there always seemed to be a barrel of beer in evidence. And my grandfather would settle us all down in orderly rows before switching on the magic box in the corner of the room. Yes, a television set. My grandparents were the first in our huge family to own a television. It probably cost them a small fortune. The set was enormous, about the size of a large refrigerator. Oh, they had one of those too. Housed in a highly polished wooden cabinet, the screen measured a massive 9 inches. However, being the engineer that he was, my grandfather had thoughtfully added a magnifier, which was strapped around the screen like some large surgical appliance. In those days, the BBC only broadcast for a few hours a day. Programmes started around 5 o'clock and finished before 11 o'clock, and were transmitted live from Alexandra Palace, not far from where we lived. We sat with the curtains tightly closed and the lights switched off, patiently waiting for the set to warm up. This usually took a few minutes. The screen then flickered into life in glorious black and white. We were then treated to the pantomime Cinderella. I've since checked and discovered that it starred Jack Hulbert and Sally Ann Howes. We stared in wonder at the images which were displayed on what was, to us, a truly magic box. It wasn't until much later, in the 1950s, that we had our own television set at home. By that time, sets were smaller, but still only had the one channel and limited viewing time. Today we can watch countless programmes of, well, it has to be said, varying quality on hundreds of channels, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Is this a good thing? You tell me. All I know is that back in the 1950s, we had no idea of what was to come, and that once released from the bottle, like a pantomime genie, there would be no going back. Have a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
TNS Soundings.
The second is an article from one of the staff reporters on the Mid-Devon, giving an update about the reintroduction of pine martens onto Dartmoor. A wildlife project has been encouraging public support to help it make the vital next step in its pioneering work to bring back a lost woodland animal, the pine marten. In September, pine martens were successfully released into woodlands on Dartmoor. 15 animals, 8 females and 7 males, were brought from healthy populations in Scotland. The story caught the public imagination, making news headlines both in Devon and as far away as Australia and North America. The reintroduction was the work of a partnership of conservation groups, including Dartmoor National Park, Devon Wildlife Trust, Exmoor National Park, Forestry England, the National Trust, Somerset Wildlife Trust and the Woodland Trust. Fundamental to the project's success has been the support received from local people. The Two Moors Pine Marten Project has worked with more than 80 volunteers who together have donated 1,800 hours of their time, undertaking tasks as diverse as pine marten den box building and tracking the animals' movements using GPS and VHF collars placed on the pine martens. We're really pleased with the pine martens' progress since their releases in September. Over the past weeks, the project has been keeping track of their movements. Some individuals have been more elusive than others, but this is to be expected, as pine martens are solitary and secretive animals, which live at low densities spread out across large areas. However, we're confident that the animals are now busy exploring the woods of Devon. With the help of volunteers, project partners and landowners, we're continuing to make plans for improving habitat for our new woodland neighbours. One of our current tasks is to provide den boxes in woodland sites, which contain fewer natural denning sites. These will also be a useful monitoring tool, and the boxes may also act as maternity dens when the females give birth next March. These will be the first pine martens to be born in Devon for more than a century. And next year, the project plans a similar release of pine martens into the wild on Exmoor, and the article is accompanied by the most gorgeous picture of a pine martin in a field. And it's just sitting up looking a bit like a meerkat, to be honest. It looks gorgeous.